Hi, this is Ken McCarthy of the System Seminar, and today we are talking with the author of Common Sense, Direct and Digital Marketing, Drayton Bird. And that book has been in print now for how many years, Drayton?
Since 1982, so that's what, a long time, 28 years? 28 years, yeah.
And continuously in print.
It's very interesting, actually. It's been the bestseller on this subject in this country every year, and it's out in, I think, 17 or 18 languages. And people keep on saying, how many copies have you sold? And I also have no bloody idea. I don't believe my publisher. Probably about 200,000, I don't know. But you see, there's places like China where you don't know what they've done.
Yeah. Absolutely. And when you say this country in for your case, is the UK.
Yeah. What's left of it, yeah.
What's left of it? Hail Britannia.
The various bits of the United Kingdom, which are floating apart fast.
Now you've been at this for quite a while, and without getting into too many details yet, and we will get into them later, but let's just set a frame so everybody gets an idea. Let's just say the decade that you started in direct marketing.
The 1950s.
So you have a little bit of experience at this. You've seen a few things.
I have screwed up more things than you ever even thought of trying in your wildest dreams.
And from what from stories you've told me, I can concur.
No, you're not supposed to say that, Ken. You're supposed to say, no, I know that you never get anything wrong. But the trouble with this business is that unless you get something wrong, you never learn anything at all.
Absolutely. But let's start out, since this is a somewhat promotional call, let's start out by talking about something you got right. It's become fashionable these days, if you're a marketing guru, to run off with Richard Branson and give him a big pile of money and stay on his island or fly on his spaceship or whatever the heck is going on. But as a business person, to me, that seems like the wrong direction for money to be flowing. Money shouldn't flow from you to Richard Branson. If you're a marketing advisor, money should flow from Richard Branson to you. And you've actually had that experience, and could you tell us the story? I think that'd be a good place to start.
Well, it's a bit long-winded, but then I am long-winded. I actually came into contact with Richard Branson years ago, when I was, it must be 20 years ago, and I was writing a column for a magazine in marketing. In England, and I wrote a very rude column, because most of my columns are rather rude, about a mailing that he had sent out with American Express and said it was a load of old rubbish. And I was about to fly off to Sydney to do some seminars in Australia. And when I got there, my son rang me up and said, hey, Richard Branson just rang, and he said, you know, if he'd like to talk about the mailing, this is his number. And I thought, how nice of him. And I was astonished, yeah? And I couldn't think of anything intelligent to say to him, so I didn't ring him. And then this is true. I actually wrote him a thing and said, I can't think of any way in which I could turn this to my advantage, Richard. So thanks for that was it. Then a few months later, I wrote another column, which happened to be more flattering. And he sent a fax back of it to me with scribbled on it, thanks very much, Richard. And those were my dealings with him then. And then years later, I was speaking at another conference much more recently, and there was a guy on before me that I thought was absolutely bloody fantastic, and we got talking. Actually, I'll be honest, I mean, we got drunk, and there was a good reason for that, because he was in the wine business, and he was running a thing called Virgin Wine, and he started asking me to do work for him. So the money that came, money came from Virgin in my direction, because I did training for them, and I wrote copy for them, and I remember I wrote what I thought was a fantastic ad for them, which had a picture of Richard Branson holding two bottles, and with his hand over the label of one of them, and the other one had a very well-known label on it, and he just said, what's the difference between the two wines? And essentially I was saying that you're paying an awful lot of money for that label. That ad never ran, because my friend said, we just cannot get Richard, you know, in one place long enough to take a picture of him. But I do remember when I did the training program, in the office I'm talking from now, I work from a little basement in the middle of London, The next day, this guy, Rowan, who worked for Richard, sent me a message saying, I just got two pieces of copy from two people who'd never written copy in their lives before, and they're both brilliant. So that was nice, because, you know, when you're as senile as I am, you really get a lot of pleasure out of helping people, to be honest. You know, it's just about all I've left I can do, you know. So that's how I really got involved with that. And then Rowan, in fact, left the Virgin Empire, and he started up on his own. But I have a wonderful video I took of him last year, about an hour long, talking about, first of all, about what it was like to work with Richard Branson, which I've just put up on the internet.
How can people get to that who are interested in following? Because I understand that you've got a big archive of videos that you've collected over the years, some new, some old. You found one of David Ogilvy in your basement archive somewhere. And so you're going to be putting these on the internet. And how can people find out about them?
Well, if you want to see the little clip of Rowan Gormley, this is the man's name, talking about what it was like to work with Richard Branson, and it will make you laugh. You just go to www.draytonbird.com/Rowan, that's Rowan, Gormley.
It's draytonbirdcommonsense.com. Yeah. / and then let's spell that name out really carefully.
Rowan, Rowangormley. And you just get a very quick picture of an extraordinary approach to business, and you suddenly realize that the approach that somebody like Richard Branson has is absolutely diametrically unlike any of the crap you get in business schools. It's completely different, and it just is hilarious. If you don't laugh, then you should probably get a job, I don't know, as an actuary, or, you know, working in a graveyard. But it's incredibly short, but very instructive.
Let's talk about Richard Branson a little bit, and why you admired him from afar, way back, because he started out as a mail order guy, did he not?
Yeah, allegedly. He couldn't afford an office, so he used to run his business from a phone booth. Whether this is one of these myths, I don't know. But that is how he started. And I think that there is an implicit moral in this. And it is that if to succeed in the kind of business we're in, you have to have a very, very sharply developed sense of priorities. You know whether you're going to win or you're going to lose very, very quickly. You don't waste your time with frippery. You get to the point. And if you see this clip, you'll see how quickly Richard Branson got to the point with my friend, but that's another subject. But so I like people who cut the crap. I have another clip of a guy who's a client of mine. They actually rang me up 5 minutes before this call to ask me to do something, and they're the most successful financial services organization in Britain, not a bank or anything like that. They advise investors. And this man, again, the guy who's worth about £300 million, which is a reasonable amount of money, incredibly focused on simple things. I interviewed him for about an hour and asked him about all sorts of things, like, how do you feel about meetings? And he said, whenever I see a meeting going on, Drayton, he said, I join it. And they all say, we're just leaving, Peter.
So he's in a meeting, in his office, he breaks it up, basically.
So you find that people that, you know, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. The people that I like and the people I admire, incredibly direct. David Ogilvy, again, incredibly direct he was. Very, very direct indeed.
And actually, for people that aren't aware of that aspect of your background, let's talk a little bit about David Ogilvy. Just to give a quick background for people that aren't aware, David Ogilvy, one of the giants of advertising in the whole century. And he was a guy that had some selling background and was very interested in direct marketing, especially the works of John Caples and Claude Hopkins. And then he started his own ad agency in his 40s, which is kind of interesting. And he was a real advocate for applying direct marketing approaches to general advertising. And if you know advertising, you don't even need to be told all this stuff. But if you're kind of new to this, you really should look into it on your own, and you'll see Ogilvy just one of the giants. So what was your experience working with David Ogilvy? How did it start, and how did it evolve?
Well, again, rather similar to think of it, a strange coincidence, because, again, I was in contact with Ogilvy long before I worked with him. I was working for an advertising agency called PKL, and I always remember I got my job because Charles Saatchi wanted more money than me. So I got my job.
I have to do a sidebar there. Charles Saatchi, I guess he and his brother pretty much had the biggest advertising agency in the world?
They did. They did eventually. I mean, they don't now, but they certainly did.
Yeah, they were
his brother was Lord Saatchi, and I remember I was negotiating with Lord Saatchi to do some business, and I said, hey, I once got a job because your brother wanted more money than me. And he said, what was the name of the agency? And I said, PKL. And the next time we met each other, he said, I mentioned that agency to Charles, and Charles said, huh, that was an agency. And one of the people there was Alan Parker, the film director. He actually worked for me very briefly. They've all done much better than I have. That's what worries me.
Yeah,
anyhow, what happened with that agency was that while I was at that agency, I wrote a letter to get a job to David Ogilvy, and I wish I'd kept it. And I got a reply immediately and said, my head of international blah, blah, blah is coming to London and to give you an interview. And I didn't go to the interview because I had a young family here and I really didn't want to leave. In order to work for David Ogilvy, I had to sell my business to him because I started a direct marketing agency in this country in the late 70s, which became the largest direct marketing agency here, and took us exactly 3.5 years. And then I sold it to Ogilvy and Mather, and then I got to know David Ogilvy extremely well and spent a lot of time with him, and stayed at his chateau and had a few drinks, had a few meals with him. He's a very, 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 very funny man. But he was a genius.
And his a new bio by Kenneth Roman just came out, and I wish I could the something of Wall Street of
it's
Madison
called
Avenue.
The King of Madison Avenue, and I'm in my little basement office, and I'm looking at the cover, and this is a strange conversation because I also interviewed the author of that book, who was the chief executive of Ogilvy & Mather Worldwide, and I interviewed him here in London about 3 or 4 months ago. And that's another thing I'm going to put up when I get around to it, talking about really the nature of David Ogilvy, because a lot of these people, in my experience anyhow, who achieve great things, they really are rather odd in one way or another. David certainly was.
Yep.
And as you say, he was a passionate advocate of direct marketing. He loved it. And he was also a very, very devious man. But that's another subject.
he had a lot going on up there. So your experience with Ogilvy's company, you did a lot of traveling for them and a lot of training and consulting.
Well, yes, it was really fair. Yeah, it was really, really odd. I mean, the reason they bought my business was because they had an agency in London which was really a very bad agency. It was a rubbish agency. And I actually said when I met them and started talking, I said, my agency is more like your agency than your agency is. What I meant was that I believed so profoundly in the Ogilvy approach that I had sort of practiced what he preached more than the agency, his own agency was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put the two, they bought my agency, we put the two agencies together. And then I got on very well with David, and I got on very well with the head of the agency in New York. And then they said, oh, will you become the worldwide creative director for the direct side of the agency, and will you become the international vice chairman? So I used to spend my entire time on airplanes and going around doing the things that I believe are incredibly important if you want to succeed beyond having a small business. So I was very, very interested in three particular activities. Number one, spreading the gospel. So I would go and I would talk to our clients, I would talk to anybody who would listen, talking about direct marketing and how it should be done. I would talk to my partners in the other disciplines, the advertising people, the public relations people and so on, spreading the gospel of direct marketing. And if you want to succeed in anything you do, you must want to spread the gospel, because if you spread the gospel, you become known as somebody who stands for something. And one of the problems in any industry, any activity, is that most of the people don't stand for anything. And in the end, if you're trying to do something, one way or another, you are selling yourself to other people. And it's very difficult to sell yourself to other people if you're just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. At some level, the people you're talking to are saying, why should I choose you? But if you're, so he's the guy who goes raving on about crap, he really loves it, you know. We know what he stands for. So that was one thing I did. And the second thing I did, arguably even more important, was I spent my time trying to locate talented people and promote them. And, you know, move them around the world, which I used to the people where I'd move people from one country to another. Because, again, once you've got an idea for a business, then there are only two other elements, yeah? There are the customers or clients, in the case of the agency business, and the staff. And oddly enough, in my view, the staff are more important than the clients. And I can remember at one time I handled the IBM account, and they were screwing us around, and they came in one day, and I said, you had one of my people in tears the other day, and you can't do that. And they said, you can't say that to IBM. And I said, I just did. And I said, let me tell you something. It takes me a long time to find somebody like her and train her. And if I've got enough of her, I can get more of you. The reverse does not apply.
Mm-hmm.
So I was absolutely obsessed with this business of getting good people, motivating good people, training good people, making good people want to do better. Yeah? And finally, of course, really trying to make it all fun for everyone. Because especially nowadays, particularly in difficult economic times, it's not much fun. Yeah? And if you're going to go into work every day and it's not going to be much fun, well, you're not going to be very highly motivated. In fact, I remember Ogilvy came in one day to my office in London, in Soho, and he said, Drayton, he said, what exactly do you do here? He said, you're not the managing director, you're not the chairman, you're not the creative director. What exactly do you do? And I said, well, actually, David, I'm in charge of entertainment. He said, what do you mean? I said, my job is to make it so much fun that people come in very early and leave extremely late. That's why I think, for instance, the guy who runs Southwestern Airlines, I very much admired him, because he obviously had this enormous ability to make people enjoy it. You know, you want people to enjoy it. You know, you spend more of your time at work than anywhere else, probably. What a terrible tragedy if you don't enjoy it. And most people don't. And they don't, because managers don't realize how important that is. After that sermon, I will stop.
That is something that you inserted throughout your book, Common Sense, Direct, and Digital Marketing. And I've shared this story with you before, but I read that book in the mid-'80s, and I remember being so taken by it, because I'd read the Ogilvy book, and I'd read the Caples book, and I'd read the books by Claude Hopkins, and they were excellent, and they gave me a lot of insight. But it wasn't until I read your book that I realized, wow, real people can do this business, and it can actually be enjoyable. I want to focus on something that I think is important. You and I are both connoisseurs of these ridiculous ads that appear everywhere on Twitter and the mailbox, and promising, you know, you'll make a million next week if you'll just give me half a million, you know. And you know, we you know, they're outrageous. And one of the bottom line realities of life is it's possible to build a business with a big annual sales, but as you point out, you're going to need help. You're going to need a staff. So there's just this reality check. It's perfectly possible to have a decent, even a good living, working as a sole operator. But if you're aspiring to the millions, you better have a crackerjack staff of people that you can count on to do all the things that you can't do. Am I being accurate here, or am I?
I think I wouldn't claim to be a good manager because I'm too disorganized. Mm-hmm. But I do know that I was able to motivate a lot of people. I still get a lot of nice messages from people to that effect. And I think that unless you are totally focused on making a life for other people within the workplace, making it fun, it's going to be very, very boring. Just in the same way that I think that if you look at what you're doing and take it terribly seriously, you're going to become extremely boring to yourself and to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's prodigiously important. It's the difference. You can't build... I mean, one could go on about this for a long, long time, but you can't build a large business unless you've spent a bit of time and actually arrived at a point of view. In fact, one of the people who, after Ogilvy stopped being the chairman of the Ogilvy Group, which he did quite young, another guy took over from him, a guy called Jock Elliott. And a friend of mine once said to Jock Elliott, so what is so remarkable about David? I've asked that question myself quite a few times. And Jock replied, well, David was a brilliant copywriter, which he was. And he had a very, very good point of view on, you know, what constituted good advertising, which he did. He said, but the thing that I think made him remarkable was that right from the start, he had a very, very clear point of view about the kind of business he wanted Ogilvy and Mather to be.
Mm.
And there's a lot of these books when you talk about... there are a lot of books that say, if you can dream it, you can do it. And I think there's a lot of truth in this, but not, unfortunately, they omit to say that you do also have to do a lot of work between the dreaming.
Yeah.
But if you can dream about what it is you want it to be eventually, if you have that clear sense of direction, if you have that clear perception of this is how I want it to end up, it will make a huge amount of difference. It's very, very similar to some of the theories to do with how people succeed in sport. You know, I mean, you succeed in sport by focusing on the desired result. It's a very, very similar thing. And I think that desired result has everything to do with how well you do. And I would add this bite, but if anyone here who's listening to this writes copy or does art direction or whatever, by dreaming about, you know, how marvelous it's going to be, you'd be amazed what a difference it makes. I find that, because I write copy, you know, I'm over 70 now, and I write copy every day. Just before this, I was writing some lines for somebody. And I find that my copy gets better if I get bloody well excited about it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
If I have this thing, wow, this is going to be fantastic, I'm going to do something terrific today, you know. It's a very, very strange business, but it's the same thing as if you're doing public speaking, which I've done a fair bit of. You have to dream of how it's going to be, get excited about it. And you can. Anybody who's written copy, for instance, knows that if you cannot get excited about what you're selling, your lack of interest, your lack of excitement will convey itself to the reader. And you go back to what you were talking about, Ken, all these really phony, dodgy things that come up. You know, I'll make you rich in 20 minutes flat. You know, all you have to do is go down to the post office and collect the money, blah, 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 blah. This is formulaic rubbish, and it comes over, you know? It comes over.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I worked with some... I didn't know at the time, but I was very lucky. In my early years, I worked with some very, very... people who became very, very famous. There's a guy called Gene Schwartz who became very, very famous as a copywriter. I didn't know. I just knew him. I was a young kid. And I worked with him. You know, he offered me a job, and I decided I wasn't good enough, which is true. But the one thing I remember about Gene Schwartz was his amazing enthusiasm. Amazing enthusiasm.
Yeah.
Yeah, amazing.
And, yeah, and it was real. It was part and parcel of his every breath.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Were you in New York at the time when you met him?
No. What happened with me was that I was very lucky because I went into advertising. I was actually a journalist, and a friend of mine said, "Oh, you know, you do well in advertising." You know, so I had no bloody idea what advertising was really. You know, I mean, I was aware of advertisements and. And eventually, after about 6 months of grovelling, I managed to get a job as a copywriter because nobody wanted a copywriter. We don't hire copywriters. You have to spend, you know, 2 years sticking things in books and, you know, running around and this, that, and the other. I want to write, you know. And eventually, I got a job as a copywriter. And I was very lucky. Very quickly, I became a creative director in London. I think I was a creative director when I was about 25 or 26. And I was increasingly dissatisfied, irritated, generally frustrated by the fact that I was having to sell to the client. I had to sell it to the client, not to the public. You know, I wanted to know, I don't really care whether you like the bloody thing. I want to know, is somebody going to buy from it, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I got my creative director's job, I would say to clients, why don't you measure things? You know, let's try measuring things. And I was very fortunate that one or two of my clients had to measure things anyhow. There was the British Travel Association, the Greek National Tourist Office, and then some people who were selling washing machines door to door. They all had to measure things. And then those who didn't have to measure things, like there was a firm that sold fabric, insulating fabric. I said, try an ad that's got a coupon in it and see what happens. And I put a very small ad in the national paper for these people, and it got more replies for them than their entire year's advertising the previous year.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really, really obsessed with this whole thing. And that's how I really got into direct marketing.
That's what I'd like to focus on next is Bettina, who works with me and has been here with me from the beginning, reminded me that there are, because I kind of assume everybody by this point knows what direct marketing is and how important it is and what an incredibly useful tool it is regardless of the business you're in and how it's a natural partner to internet marketing and all these things that I take for granted. And she mentioned to me that still most people don't even know what direct marketing is.
Listen, most people don't even know what marketing is, yeah? I've now spoken in 50 countries, and in the first few years I used to stand up and say, can anybody here define marketing? And it would be usually to a marketing audience. Most people could not. Because most people are too busy doing what they're doing to think about why they are doing it and in many cases what precisely they are doing. And the only reason that you and I are talking today is because you read that book in the New York Public Library all those years ago.
Yep.
And the reason that book came about was that I noticed that nobody had defined the subject simply. I thought, this is incredible. This is an industry that's growing by leaps and bounds. And I have yet to see a simple definition of it. So I sat down and I said, okay, after a bit of thought, a lot of thought, that direct marketing is any activity whereby you reach people directly or they respond to you directly, the benefit of which is automatically, if you bother, that you can measure everything. You can code everything. You can measure everything. So you can spend your money where it does most good. And this is extraordinary to me. At the moment, I'm doing a lot of work with companies and saying, with their websites, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And I just say, you know, which we did. We did an analysis of lots and lots of websites. And we noticed that overwhelmingly, I would say 80% of them made 4 out of 5 very, very basic errors. Every single one of them was making at least 2 or 3 basic errors. And nearly all these errors had to do with how I tried to define the way in which direct marketing operates through any medium. So how does it operate? Yeah. First of all, you try to isolate a prospect or customer as an individual. As it were, say somebody goes onto your website and leaves you their name and, you know, email address, yeah? You've isolated them. You've got them. You've captured them, yeah? Mm-hmm. And then you try to build a continuing relationship with these people, because, again, the great benefit of direct marketing being you can measure everything, you know that the customer you've got is worth a lot more than the customer you want. So somebody whose name you've got and you've started talking to, the minute you've got their name, they're twice as valuable statistically as somebody identical whose name you don't have, because you've got a relationship with them. Then the minute they buy something, they're between 3 and 8 times as valuable to you. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the third thing is you can measure everything. And the great thing about the Internet, which is no different at all in any significant respect apart from this to any other medium, is speed. Yeah?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You can have an idea this morning. I did have an idea yesterday morning, and I said, send some stuff out. And this morning I rang up my guy and I said, so what was the opening rate? He said, about 20%. What was the click-through rate? 4.7, because we sent out to between 4.7 and 4.6, yeah? That, to me, is bloody magic, but because it's so quick. There are other aspects that I find very, very... Well, to me, anyhow, because I'm childish, I like these things, you know, really exciting. The fact that you can see, to a far greater extent, exactly how people behave, like what they look at, how long they look at it for, and so on and so on. But I see a lot of research, for instance, about readership. People announce, ta-da, we've just discovered that people don't read every word on a website, they scan. Big deal, I knew that, I could have told you that 40 bloody 6 years ago when I first saw eye camera tests for advertisements. I know that people do not automatically go through your stuff, yeah?
There's an awful lot of reinventing the wheel in the internet world, where people would just take a weekend to just read a book. They would
absolutely staggers me. I still do. I was talking to some students at the Institute of Direct Marketing here 2 days ago, and I said, "How many of you have read Claude Hopkins?" One person put their hand up.
Yep.
How many of you have read Ogilvy on Advertising? One person put their hand up. I said, you want to know something? I am bloody lazy, yeah? You will never meet anybody lazier than me. And I'll tell you, I'm so lazy that I'd prefer to spend a weekend reading somebody who knows much more than I do, because he's done it all and made every mistake, than spend the next bloody 30 years finding out through trial and error. That's how lazy I am. But the rest of you, you're very energetic. You want to spend the rest of your lives not reading any books. Good bloody luck to you, yeah? And this is the great thing. That's the other great thing about this business, of course, is that, you know, you don't have to be a genius. And it's not nuclear science. It's very, very simple. You just have to see what other people have learned, study, and follow it. And if I'm always amused by the subject lines and the lines I see in emails and stuff I see, and I sort of say, oh, I saw that in 1954, whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Very few of them are really new.
Yeah.
And they still make
the
same mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what's really interesting. You see, I was reading Gary Bentz-Ivanga the other day, who I greatly admire, and I noticed that he was focusing on something. He was focusing on credibility, you know. You must explain to people why it's true. So when somebody says, I'm going to make you rich by next Tuesday, unless you're a complete moron, you're going to say, really? I have some doubts about this. Can you prove it to me? And I was thinking, well, Gary was writing about this very well. But the first great modern, the first modern copywriter was a man called Johnny Powers in 1850. Yeah?
Hmm.
And he was successful because he used to give a reason why this was a good deal, or a reason why this was good, yeah? And there are still people out there, here we are, 160 years later, they still don't know it. It's just incredible.
Yeah, and so when we talk about direct marketing, and we encourage people to look into it and become, you know, familiar with it, and we say that, you know, internet marketing is rooted in direct marketing, this is what we're talking about. These books that are out there, readily available, all very affordable, that can give you the foundation. And then the second piece of the puzzle, it's kind of like a bicycle, I guess, with two wheels. One wheel is take advantage of existing knowledge, of which there's a lot,
and then two, do your own tests, because ultimately everything has to be tested. Because you, I think one of the great things about direct marketing is it induces some humility, because you realize you have no idea what's going to work and what's not going to work until you've tested, and often you can be surprised.
Oh, it's appalling. It's an appalling business because, you know, I write something and I'm terrified to see whether it's going to work or not. You know, I'm all absolutely bloody terrified. I'm the worst person on earth. I live in a state of total terror in case I'm going to write something that doesn't work. And I remember all the stuff that doesn't work. I don't remember the stuff that does work. You know?
Exactly.
It's very, very depressing. But then when it does come off, then it's, you know, it's a great thing. It's a great thing.
Yep. Well, we obviously could talk a lot more, and we shall, but I wanted to introduce everyone to you. I'd say first, if you want to know more about Drayton, the quickest and simplest thing to do would be to go to Drayton Bird Common Sense. Is that right? DraytonBirdCommonSense.com. And then to see these videos, in fact, in particular, the first one that you've just posted, once you go to DraytonBirdCommonSense.com/, and tell us again.
It's Rowan Gormley, R-O-W-A-N, Gormley, G-O-R-M-L-E-Y.
So that's
very
available,
funny,
right? That's available right now to watch.
Yeah, I just put that up today. Well, I'll be putting some more up.
Yeah, and you have this archive of some recent interviews, and then some of this really interesting older stuff from you found some stuff from David.
Well, yes, this is really, really, really odd, because I sort of had somebody going through the cupboard here, and they said, "Hey, look at this! You know, what's this?" I said, "That's me interviewing a guy from American Express 20 years ago." This is David Ogilvy. I looked at this David Ogilvy thing, and it was just hilarious because it reminded me of one of the best days of my life. I was arriving in India, in Bombay, in India, and I arrived at the agency there, and they were all in a meeting, and the girl on reception said, they're all in a meeting, the director's in a meeting, why don't you go and join them? And I got in there, and they said, we're all watching a video of David Ogilvy at a training session for senior managers. So I said, oh, that's interesting. So I sat down, and almost immediately David said, was talking to these managers, and he said, have you seen Drayton Bird yet? And he said some very nice things about me. So I thought, felt pleased as punch. And I was so surprised, you know, and I never even knew I had this video until this guy who works with me said, oh, we've got this video, blah, 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 David Ogilvy talking. Oh, I said, let me have a look at it.
Great.
And I'd never seen it. I'd just seen this little bit when I was in India.
Oh, okay. Will you be posting that one at some point?
I'll put up a little bit of that one probably in a week or two. What's very funny, he makes a very, very funny joke about Mother Teresa, actually. Very, very funny man. But what's great about it is you understand the extraordinary powerful personality he had.
Yeah.
And he was really old then, but he still comes over. And you can see what an extraordinary individual he was.
Well, speaking of an extraordinary individual coming over, if you live in the United States, or anywhere in the world, actually, if you can get yourself to Chicago, April 9th through 11th, we're having Systems Seminar 2010. It's our annual gathering of serious internet marketers. And Drayton will be there. We'll be speaking. And as something extra, beyond the Systems Seminar on April 12th, we're going to run a master class, small group. So if you're interested, look into it sooner rather than later. It's going to feature Drayton, myself, and Perry Marshall. And we're going to be talking about classic direct marketing, something that we all know a bit about, and how to weave it into successful internet marketing. So if you're interested in that, go to thesystemseminar.com, and you'll see all the information, the dates and places and prices and so on. And if you'd like a great book to really inspire you and educate you about direct marketing, which, again, I can't say it enough, and Drayton can't say it enough, and Perry can't say it enough, and everybody we know can't say it enough. direct marketing is the foundation of successful internet marketing. It also happens to be one of the greatest bags of tricks you could ever accumulate if you want to be a success in business. We started this call talking about Richard Branson, and his early business was a mail order business. How about, and I'm forgetting his first name, but Dell Computers. That was originally
Michael
a
Dell.
Mail order business. Michael Dell. We could go on and on and on. Companies that have become very successful and are known for their innovation and their wealth and so on, very often started on somebody's kitchen table, but not any old kitchen table, the kitchen table of a direct marketer. And you know what? Maybe in the next call that we do, we could talk about some of the personalities you've met, because we've talked about your famous clients, but there's a lot of sharp operators that you've worked with over the decades, to say the least.
Many of them still out of jail.
hopefully they've reformed. But things that we can learn from small, very focused businesses. You know, it's not all corporate things. And you still work with a lot of small entrepreneurs as well.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and I'm fascinated by businesses of all sizes. We had a client who came to us about 4 weeks ago. Then they sell shoes, little shoes, yeah, and it's called Little Shoes, I think. And I just looked at it, and I said, they can probably help you. And they were telling me how they'd started with absolutely nothing. And they were starting to do well. And then I started talking to them about the ways in which I thought they ought to segment what they were offering. Not just to say, you know, you could also offer big shoes, but they said to me, oh, we've got a wide range of suppliers, because I said, I see you say you talk about your shoes being handmade. And this is the sort of thing that I think is very important, you know, if you want to succeed with this business, is to try and interrogate the client or the product and try and find out more, because then the more you know, the more you can do. So I said, oh, they're handmade. Why don't you say more about that? And they said, well, the quality is very variable. Some of them come from China, and some of them are just as good as Manolo Blahnik shoes and the most expensive shoes on earth.
Yeah.
And I talked to my partner about this, and we said, maybe they shouldn't be having one site selling such a wide range of quality, you know? Because, again, you see, the whole key to success to a large extent revolves around the fact that what happens after you make the sale is much more important than in many ways. Obviously, you've got to make the sale to start with, but what happens afterwards is in many ways more important than what happens to start with. So knowing that the customer you've got is more valuable than the customer you want, if you confuse that customer you've got by having a very, very unpredictable quality range, you could be storing up problems for yourself. So you can take a small business like that, and I notice them and ask them a question, look at them and say, maybe you should think about this. And that's another aspect of this whole business which interests me, which is that it's not just a way of selling things to people. If you do it properly, you really begin to understand the realities of business.
Absolutely. And it does flow out of direct marketing and mail order experience. All these patterns just become obvious. Well, Drayton, we've run out of time on this call, but we will have other calls coming in the future. And again, I want to encourage everyone, you can go to DraytonBird.com, and there's all kinds of things there. If you'd like a great book in your library, hopefully one that you really read and take to heart, Common Sense, Direct and Digital Marketing. If you are interested in joining us live, we're all going to be at the System Seminar this year in Chicago, April 9th through 11th, and that's thesystemseminar.com. Drayton Bird, thanks so much. More calls to come. It's great to have you sharing really experience that is not easy to find anywhere with our listeners.
Thanks a lot, Ken.